Before we get into the book itself, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you came to writing.
Well, been in Alaska for 50 years or so and lived on Pinnock Island for 40-some of that, 42, I think. And always wrote for fun. Oh, I say always. That's not quite true. The last 25 years, I'd just go home and write because I like doing it. I didn't submit anything. And started with poetry and short stories, and I thought, well, you know, why not? Well, I did short stories at my first book, Bad Waters short stories. And so after that, I got a little confidence and thought I'd try a novel. So
this book is about a community called Harbor Cove and the people who end up there.
Right.
Did you base this on your own experiences, experiences of people you know?
Yes, I did. Some of that stuff you can't make up. So we spent summers of the last 20 or some years. We leave Ketchikan in May or June and don't come home till early September. Have a boat we can live comfortably on. And that time was spent in the more remote areas of Southeast Alaska. We've been from Glacier Bay to Duke Island, you know, and some of those places I won't say which ones, but some of those places we go every year, you know, and get to know the people and talk about how they do things and see how they do things. And then when I was in the construction business, I built a school in a remote area. I'll say Port Alexander. Yeah. And although this book is not specifically about any of those small places, it's kind of an amalgamation of people and events that we experienced over the years. And our fascination, my fascination, I guess I should say, is how well people just make things work. They don't need the telephone, don't need a car and a grocery store they can walk down to every day. They just kind of make do under what a lot of folks would think were difficult circumstances, although I don't think they view it that way.
The town itself, you mentioned, is not real.
Right.
But you interweave different stories, different people, and they're not actual people that you know, but they are, many of these stories, things that you encountered.
Right. We've had experiences with folks, you know. And some of the stories are parts of stories that different people have told us. So there's nothing in here to identify any particular individual, but, you know, I think the sense of how they do things is captured.
In it, you have some people who are involved with logging, some people who are involved with fishing. Did you yourself do logging and fishing?
Well, I grew up in a logging community when I was young, and I've commercial fished a little bit, yeah. So, not a lot, but long-lined and trolled for salmon. And stuff, you know.
So in writing this, did you draw on your own knowledge, or did you do some research on this to get information more about the fishing and logging?
I pretty much knew all that. I did. I have to give kudos to Stretch Chatham, who was a beach logger and has a small tug, and he's a neighbor of mine on Pinnock. And so when it came to the actual beachcombing the logs in the story, he did sit down with me and explain some of the details of how that worked.
You have some of the people that are coming from the lower 48, shall we say.
Yeah.
Some people who have been in this community probably all of
yeah,
their life.
Right.
What is it that you're trying to bring in this story about bringing these people together?
Well, part of it is people come and go in Alaska. We're a transient population, basically, you know. And most all of us, I don't know how many data, but I would say a large percentage of us come from, like I came from Oregon, you know, they come north for different reasons. Some, you know, because they're just looking for adventure. Some, frankly, are getting away from something. Want to hide out for a little bit. And some just wind up here and for no apparent reason. I mean, my wife and I did this because, you know, we were looking for work. So jobs are available.
This, in reading this, I think it gives a good sense of life in a small place in Southeast Alaska. Have you had responses from people who aren't from Alaska? It seems to me like someone from Alaska certainly can relate to this. They've known people like
exactly.
this or seen the places.
Yeah.
Have you had any reactions from people from other places who are not familiar with Southeast?
That's a good question because we just came back for a return from the Northwest, and I gave a book talk in a place called Charbonneau, which is a suburb south of Portland. And it was fun because it was all new to them, you know. I mean, the notion of living, for example, without a car, I mean, that's impossible. I mean, how could somebody do that, you know, or why would they do that, you know? And the fact that you would live in a place where there isn't any cell phone coverage, I mean, why would you do that? So they were very interested. And in some cases, puzzled, you know, about why would you live that way on purpose, you know?
And someone could argue the other way.
Yeah,
why,
that's true.
In a
yeah,
sense,
exactly.
In a sense.
Yeah.
And
which my book is trying to explain.
Yeah, and I was thinking that too. Is in it you do have a character, at least one, if not several, that go south and then end up coming back because it isn't the place where they really feel they're meant to be going to Lower 48. So
Liz, particularly, she's one of my favorite characters. But exactly, and that's another component, I guess. Of course, this is the way I feel about it, but everybody's not going to feel this way. But, you know, once you've done this for a while, then I kind of feel like those folks I talked to in Charbonneau, I mean, I'm saying to myself, why would you people want to live this way? I mean, once you get once you get a sense of the privacy and you have and the sense that you have control over events rather than the traffic on I-5, you know, controlling your life. I don't see how anybody could go back.
And just for people, since we are on the radio and trying to get people a sense of this book, can you explain a little bit about kind of what the structure of it is, the story, how it's put together? Obviously not the whole thing, but just an idea of what people would read.
Well, that's a good question. The sense of it for me is that there are several things that I've tried to weave into this, and I'm not sure I did a very good job of any of them. But one thing is perspective. I mean, I don't know how many times we've gone south over the years, and I've tried to explain to people why we like Alaska and why it's different. I can't do it, and I'm not sure I've done it here either. And my short stories were the same attempt. So there's that, you know. Another is, you know, when there's lack of rules, and you live in a place where basically no rules, I find people very ingenious about figuring out ways to get along. And it's not like you see in the movies where there's conflict and resolution and some final ending where it goes bad or doesn't. I mean, just after seeing folks live like this, you know, on a day-to-day basis, they work things out. It might be unusual, like the one character, Randy, who has some problems and can't show up for work, and Everett, the boss, can't let him get away with that because he's got a crew there, so he fires him for a day or two. But knowing that he just has some bad days, lets him come back and work because he's making it, you know. So I think there's a sense of community there that doesn't exist in big towns for sure. Folks helping each other out the best they can. Sometimes it's unusual, but.
And as you said as well, being resourceful, because you can't just go drive down to the hardware store and get parts.
Right.
You have to scavenge or figure out some way to make things work.
Or do without.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, all that to me is just fascinating, that people don't need all the trappings of modern society.
And I had a question about one of it. In one of the chapters is called Liz, and the beginning of that chapter seemed really familiar to me. Did you use that story elsewhere?
I did. It was in my short stories. So I took Liz from, that's the first story in
that was Bad Water.
In Bad Water. And I thought, well, it'd be a shame to let her just dangle there.
Because it felt like, I swear I've read the beginning of this before, that's where it was.
I should have maybe put a note in there or something, but yeah, that's right, exactly right. Yeah.
Did you use any other elements from Badwater?
I did. Eric, the guy from Thomas Basin, where there was a person that was stabbed and everyone thought he did it. He's in Badwater as well. So I thought they'd make a nice couple.
And this is set in Southeast Alaska. Again, the main character community, Harbor Cove, is not real, but so much of it is real cities, real communities, real places that people will recognize.
I think so, yeah. You could, I mean, there's only so many remote fish buying stations in Southeast Alaska, you know, I mean, so you, you know, but some of the characters came from other places that we had been, you know. Or I shouldn't say the seed for the character. You know.
You also have this one-legged raven that is in the story. Is there significance to that? Is there symbolism in that? Why bring in this raven who's one-legged? Or did you happen to just know a one-legged raven?
Well, I've seen him. I don't sit around and talk to him. Well, I thought that the raven connected everybody a little bit, because he roamed around and was a figure that everyone trusted. Randy even talked to him a lot, and he was there from the beginning to the end, and I like ravens, okay, and I think they're smart. And so he adapted, and they adapt well. So he adapted, just like everybody else, to the community, you know. And I ended the book with him, eating out of a McDonald's box, because he was going to adapt again when civilization came. He'd make it when some of the other people wouldn't.
I would like to say also, I, having not lived in a remote camp or anything like that, I know a little bit about a few things. I think it was nice to read about people basically living off the land. Is I need to harvest
sure.
this, I need to build a lean-to because my house, I don't have one, or
right.
my house
yeah,
fell
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
I don't have these supplies, so here are things I need to do.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy that aspect of understanding how people live in these remote places
yeah.
and get by.
Get by. And prefer it that way. Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I really enjoyed writing the book and, of course, like telling stories.
Let me go ahead and have you maybe read a little something from the book, and if you need to explain a little bit beforehand, please
sure.
do.
Well, we're in Harbor Cove, and we're at the fuel dock, which is kind of the community center. And Neil, the is sitting or standing at the railing up on the deck having a cigarette, and he hears some buddy talking down on the float by the gas, by the fuel pumps. And it's Randy, one of the workers, who has a hard time with things. And he's talking to a raven. And Randy's sitting on one bucket and the raven on the other, on another. Now Randy speaks in hushed tones and leans forward a bit more. They will come. He's talking about the road. That guy from the Forest Service is right. All of the things he talked about will happen. They're happening now. I can hear car doors opening and closing, see people pointing. Nothing can stop all of those words he used at that meeting. Those words were flying around the room. I can see them hanging in the air, floating around the room, lying on the floor, drooping from the light fixtures. They're everywhere. I don't know if you notice, but some even tried escaping out the door. But all those died on the porch. Those words were meaningless. But the ones that gathered on the teacher's desk are the ones that will do the most damage. The ones that didn't try to escape. The ones that said, all of this is for your own good. The road will make your life easier. The road will make you safer.
That was author Tom Hunt talking about his new book, The Cove. Hunt will have a presentation at the Ketchikan Public Library on December 1st at 3 p.m.